Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's August 28th. Currently 56 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 55 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yes, another beautiful start out there with all that sunshine and these comfortable temperatures. Now, you've probably noticed it is, as you mentioned, a couple of degrees warmer than the past couple of mornings. So instead of the 40s, we've got the 50s out there. But hey, I don't think we'll have too many complaints about that. But it's still going to be another nice afternoon out there with lots of sunshine, temperatures climbing to the upper 70s to right around 80 in Park City and in the Heber Valley. We'll see those temperatures climbing into the mid 80s across the area this afternoon. So a little smidge warmer as well as we get towards this afternoon. Now, one thing I will point out as we go into the afternoon hours, there's going to be a weak front that's going to move through the area. Now, it's not going to bring us any rain chances or really any clouds as well. But what it will is potentially pick up the winds just a little bit out of the south and west ahead of that front. So we could see some winds gusting up to 15 to 20 miles per hour, especially as you get towards Park City, and maybe even up to 25 as you get towards Park City, and about 15 to 20 in the Heber Valley. And then as we go into this afternoon, that front will move through. And once it moves through, the winds will switch out of the west, and that could bring in just a smidge of haze from some of those wildfires in California. So we'll still call it sunny skies, but there could be a tint of haze from that. And then tonight, the winds switch out of the north and northwest, and that could bring in a little more widespread smoke and haze from those wildfires in Idaho as we get into our Thursday. But otherwise, lots of sunshine expected. And again, today we'll see those highs upper 70s in Park City, in the low to mid 80s in the Heber Valley. And then tonight, once that front moves through, of course, it's going to bring back another little surge of cooler air. So we'll be seeing those overnight lows in the Heber Valley back into the low to mid 40s. And then across Park City, we'll likely see our temperatures dropping down into the 40s as well. So kind of a chilly start again as we go into our Thursday, and lots of sunshine. We're back into the 80s as we get into your Thursday afternoon. We'll call it low to mid 80s in the Heber Valley and highs only in the mid 70s in Park City. So we'll get another nice little cool, pleasant day behind this front. And then as we get towards Friday, heading into the all-important holiday weekend, we've got lots of sunshine in the forecast heading into that weekend. Temperatures, though, will start to climb as a high-pressure ridge builds in. So we're looking at those highs climbing through the 80s in both Park City and in the Heber Valley. In fact, in the Heber Valley, we'll likely get to the low 90s by the time we get towards this upcoming weekend. So it will be a little warmer as we go into our Labor Day weekend. And right now, Labor Day, it's looking like mostly sunny skies. There is a slight hint that we could have a little monsoon moisture, but right now that looks to mainly stay to our south. So I think we're just going to mainly be dealing with warm and dry conditions with just a few extra clouds building in across the area. But overall, that's something I think we can handle as we get towards our Labor Day. But enjoy today, a little breezy this afternoon, and cooler as we go into your Thursday.
Okay, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the founder of Live Like Sam, Ron Jackenthal, along with Dr. Aaron Fisher, who started the Utah School Mental Health Collaborative. They'll be telling us about this new partnership as well as the upcoming fundraising gala. And Park City Friends of Library Board member Rachel Salmon will be joined by Park City librarian Becca Lale with details about the used book sale coming up this weekend. And finally, Swiss Days chairman Craig Simons previewing this week's events happening in Midway. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include brain surgeon Dr. Theodore Schwartz. He explores the past, present, and future of neurosurgery in his new book, Gray Matters, a biography of brain surgery. Then the 31st annual Backcountry Benefit for the Utah Avalanche Center takes place on September 12th. Executive Director Emeritus Chad Bracklesburg talks about the Utah Avalanche Center's cutting-edge work in snow safety education and practices while you can attend the best party of the year. All of that coming up, of course, on The Mountain Life every Wednesday between 9 and 10. Well, a Park City committee is discussing ideas for how to keep Main Street a tourist destination for decades to come. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
The 9-member committee includes Park City officials, business owners, and residents. They've held several meetings this year, and topics include several pie-in-the-sky concepts, including a gondola connecting Main Street to Deer Valley Resort, housing and commercial development on Sweet Alley, and a new town plaza where the post office now stands. Park City Councilmember Ryan Dickey emphasized that the high-level ideas are just talking points, and the city is far from any final decision.
I think this is really born of an effort over multiple years to engage on a visioning process for Main Street and the downtown core to say, where do we want to be in the next 10 to 50 years? And from the perspective of maintaining our historic character, but also looking at infrastructure improvements and property and economic vibrancy and vitality of the neighborhood.
As new developments pop up at Deer Valley and Canyons Village continues to add amenities, Park City wants Main Street to remain a top destination for visitors and their dollars. Dickey says part of that is making Main Street more walkable. The committee is exploring designs including a one-way street and curbless sidewalks. But not everyone is on board, including Gallery Mar owner and committee member Maren Mullen.
So I have spoken with several business owners on the street, and none of them have been pro-pedestrianization. So, yeah, we're not at a consensus on that yet.
Dickey says the committee has also briefly discussed the idea of a gondola connecting the Brew Pub lot at the top of Main Street to Deer Valley's Snow Park base.
That's where our number one customer comes from, is Deer Valley. And if you have a reimagined street experience and we have another resort connection at the bottom of the street, all of a sudden you're talking about something that's pretty vibrant.
Part of a reimagined street design could include a new town plaza replacing the post office on Main Street, which dates back to 1921. The committee has discussed the potential for a new gathering area in front of City Hall, but Mullen expressed hesitation about removing the post office.
Cannot throw that baby out with the bathwater. That is a sacred cow. So I think the post office, as we're talking as a group, it's our opinion that we want to keep the post office in the downtown area.
Dickey says a big topic of discussion has been Main Street's parallel side street, Sweet Alley, which has a lot of city-owned property, including the China Bridge Garage and Bob Wells Plaza. He says there's potential to replace the existing structures with hotels and commercial space, moving the parking underground.
If you can bring more people into that core, then you drive funding sources for the type of big improvements we're talking about, but you also bring year-round vibrancy. You bring the ability to get a cup of coffee on Main Street in April before 8 in the morning. You bring a lot of the things that locals want to see on Main Street.
The committee has also discussed building housing on the Sandridge lots, which overlook Main Street along Marsac Avenue. Park City plans to host an open house in October to share more details and gather input from residents. More information about the committee's discussions and renderings of the Main Street development ideas can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, this year's Live Like Sam fundraising gala is set for September 21st at the Marquee Park City. Funds raised will help to support a new partnership the foundation has with the Utah School Mental Health Collaborative. In the studio with details, I have the co-founder of Live Like Sam Foundation, Ron Jackenthal. He's joined by Dr. Aaron Fisher, who started that collaborative back in 2021. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Ron, I always like to start these interviews by giving you a minute just to talk about the origins of the foundation and what Living Like Sam looks like.
Thanks, Leslie. So as many in the community know, Sam, my son, was the men's overall junior national freestyle ski champ. And in 2015, he won those awards. Later that year, he was traveling in Australia with the ski team and had an unfortunate accident. And ultimately, Sam passed away. And there was just so much love that came from the community for our family. 1,400 people showed up at Olympic Park. So many things happened. And it really was just this energy and momentum of people wanting to keep Sam in their life. And Sam was this like kind, empathetic, happy, positive kid that just lit up a room. And that eventually led me to do some personal work on my own grieving, realized that, a lot of families that have lost kids, they've lost them to overdose and suicide. And I kind of oddly felt like the lucky one. And that inspired me to leave my corporate career, start our foundation, and find ways to bring mental health and well-being solutions to our society, because we're really struggling. And so that's what we do. We're really about helping our youth have the healthiest sense of self possible.
Yeah. And since we last talked, you have formed this partnership with the Utah School Mental Health Collaborative. Why is this an important partnership for the foundation?
They're a brilliant organization. They're part of the University of Utah, work closely with Huntsman Mental Health. I'll let Dr. Fisher talk about that. For us, it's not only very validating that we're on the right track. You know, we looked for a lane for a while. Like, what? How can we make the greatest impact plugging Sam's inspiration into an actual gap that needs to be filled in this community? And there is a mental and emotional health gap that's huge. And this partnership is an amazing step towards resolving some of these issues.
All right. So, Dr. Fisher, then maybe you talk to us first. Why did you found this collaborative?
Yeah, well, you know, across Utah, youth are really struggling with their mental health issues, and providers, school personnel, folks across the state really cared about changing that landscape. And so we wanted to take the initiative with that. And so, like you said, in 2021, we kicked off this partnership with many folks across the state to really try to help youth and really try to help bring better systems to schools.
All right. So what is the collaborative? I mean, what is it that you do?
Yeah. So we work with schools and communities to really help bring more effective systems of mental health to schools. That means everything from screening to psychiatric support. But really what we're looking for is being able to meet students where they're at. And with the Live Like Sam Foundation partnership, we're really able to meet them where they're at, because so many students aren't necessarily experiencing anxiety, depression at the current moment, but they may be at risk for developing those things. And so we really want to find community partners that can help bridge some of that gap.
Yeah, so is it that you get into the schools, or are you a reference for this, for school, you know, administrators, or?
Yeah, we're kind of all of those things. We work directly with students through both telehealth and in-person services, but we're also engaging educators, parents, and administrators to have them have better understanding of how to deal with these issues, and even just to do the simple things like ask students how they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I saw online that you have almost a 25 team member in the collaborative. What, working statewide then? And is it they're assigned to different areas, or? I mean, maybe you can explain a little bit more how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So how we work is we have these partnerships that we form with both the local mental health authorities, so that would be like counseling centers. We also work with school districts. And what we're trying to do is make sure that they can screen mental health issues for students, and we're in the schools helping the school teams actually deliver those screenings. And we're doing that in partnership with legislators and people at the State Board of Education who have passed policy around these issues. And then once we can identify these students, then we can understand what type of services they need. Some just need groups so that they can talk about their anxiety or their depression. And we can do that both in communities as well as across the state through telehealth access. And then some students need more intensive services. And so we'll have our psychiatric team come in, and they'll provide a consultation and evaluation. But rather than provide the med management, they'll consult with the local pediatrician, someone who maybe knows the student a little bit better. So what we're trying to do is really bridge the gap and fill those holes both in person and remotely through telehealth.
All right. And so now when you work with the Live Like Sam Foundation, how is that going to work?
Yeah. And that's what's been really exciting about this new partnership, is that we're able to have referrals from the school that can really connect youth with their peers and get resilient support in the community. And so when we're working in schools, when our graduate students are providing these services, time and time again, we're hearing, what do we do for those students who are kind of at risk for developing depression or anxiety? And so now we have a really immediate referral pathway that peers can get in touch with their peers and learn about coping and resilience and be, you know, stronger when these difficult situations come their way.
Yeah. So Ron, how are you going to use this partnership then?
You know, they've got a phenomenal resources and staff. The first project we're working on together is they are getting behind Thrive, so which is, you know, our well-being partnership with our partnership with We Be Well, our six-week psychoeducation program that's having phenomenal results. And Thrive received evidence-based certification last fall from the state of Utah, which was a huge coup for us. We've invested over $300,000 in the further development of Thrive's adult program to be rewritten to be age appropriate for high school and middle school students. We're seeing incredible results. We're seeing anxiety and depression be reduced by over 20%, some cases over 25%. We're even seeing better results for some specific populations like the Latinx population. And so we're super excited about being able to expand our program. Aaron's organization has a very deep and far reach, and also, you know, they're incredibly strong ties to resources like the University of Utah and Huntsman Mental Health. So it's really going to elevate our game in Summit and Wasatch County.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you, as the collaborative, then have to charge people? I mean, how is it that you you know, can make this work?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Well, luckily, we're able to provide these services for free through grants that we have through foundations like Intermountain Community Cares, through Cambia Health Solutions, through the LDS Church, and also through the Marriott Daughters Foundation. So we really have this broad community support that's really making these services available. And for me, that's what really gives me hope in this work, is that we have such a response from our community.
All right. Wanted to talk briefly about the coming up next week. Ron, you've got a free community event at the Blair Education Center. Tell me about that.
We do. So we have a kind of a youth resource event at the Blair Education Center. It's September 4th from 5:45 until around 7:30 p.m. And it ends with an ice cream social. But what's going to be most important is we will have several speakers from Aaron's organization just introduce the services that they provide that families, educators, health workers can gain access to in this community. We will also have a brief presentation by We Be Well around Thrive and just its impact. And also a new partnership we have with the founder is formerly from Park City, Bryce Baker, and the organization is called Pixel Health. And there are a new exclusive partnership around digital wellness, and that's a new program that we are rolling out next month. And digital wellness really focuses on having healthy relationships with technology, especially around our goal is to bring resources to the community to combat cyberbullying and some of the really negative ramifications of social media that is wreaking havoc on our youth.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to turn to you. I mean, as just an outside, thought about this, Park City School District has just put a ban on cell phones in classrooms. How helpful is that going to be, do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's going to be helpful in the sense that it can reduce some of the distractions, because I think, like Ron was saying, social media and technology really can exacerbate some of the issues. It gives more access to have cyberbullying, to have some of these things. So if we can have some differentiation between when we can use the device, when we can't, maybe some pragmatics around it, it can really help, I think, our youth understand how to engage with those things better. So I'm really hopeful, knowing that the school has made that distinction for this year.
Yeah, I mean, in your practice, I mean, have you seen an increase in terms of just the amount of tech time is spent on, you know, a device as opposed to, I don't know, 10 years ago? You may not be old enough to remember.
Yeah, absolutely. I think now, screens and social media are such an integral part of student socialization. So it's kind of, you know, embedded in all the things that they do. Yeah, 10 years ago, it wasn't as accessible. And 20 years ago, it wasn't as accessible. It wasn't even around. So I think we're really seeing that shift through the past two decades.
Yeah. All right. So everyone's invited to the next Wednesday then, if they want to learn more.
Yes. Yep. So it's a free resource night. It's at the hospital at the Blair Education Center. Please come out. We've got a lot of capacity. There'll be food, and more importantly, there'll be really some beautiful learning from leaders in the community. And all the presentations will be very short, but incredibly informative and valuable.
All right. You mentioned that the Thrive program, and that's something that people need to register for. Is that come and gone, that registration period?
Well, so Thrive, there's the current Thrive enrollment session. We've got six more days. They can go on our website. But I really encourage any parents, educators, health workers that have students that are between the ages of 11 and 18 in Summit and Wasatch County to take our Thrive program. It's a beautiful program. It's a low lift. Basically, it's a $500 program that we fully scholarship. And if the kids participate and graduate, they get a $60 research stipend. But more importantly, they learn coping skills. You know, one of the lessons is around thought traps and thinking traps and rumination and how to figure out when you're kind of in a thought thinking trap and how to get out of it. And so we really have some very practical skills that ultimately help reduce anxiety, depression, help increase feelings of joy and connectedness. So again, just go on livelikesam.org. You'll go to programs for Thrive, and you can register your child for free.
Okay. Then coming up later in September, September 21st, the annual Live Like Sam Gala, this time at a new location.
It is. So, you know, we're self-funded. Two years ago, we had no employees. Last year, we had 1.5. Now we have 5. Running a nonprofit is not inexpensive, and we'll put $500,000 of free programming in this community this year alone and more next year, and we're expanding heavily into South Summit, North Summit, and especially Wasatch County with a focus on Heber. And then this is not cheap. And We do some really deep work. We have to raise funds. We have less than 5% of our budget guaranteed coming into the year, so it's a lot of pressure. And the way to, for us to do this besides grants and individual donations is to throw a really big party. So we've been doing it at the Utah Olympic Park for the last 4 years. We've had a phenomenal partnership with them and great success, but we wanted to mix it up. So we've moved it to Main Street. We've increased capacity by over 50%. So we're doing it at the Marquee, which used to be Harry O's or Park City Live. A beautifully catered gala meets a private VIP concert. And we have two special music guests. One is Wyatt Pike, our local celebrity friend of my daughter, who was an American Idol finalist. And the other is Super Diamond, which is the nation's largest or most popular Neil Diamond cover band. And I just can't tell you how many people are so excited about Super Diamond. They've come through town before. The Canyon, CVMA, is actually bringing them in next summer on the 4th of July weekend for Forum Fest. It's a phenomenal band. They normally play in front of 2,000 to 5,000 person crowds. We're gonna have 350 guests. So if anybody wants to come out, come to Main Street when the tourists are, you know, they're gone. Just come back, reclaim Main Street, support a great cause. Come out on September 21st. We're about 70% sold out. And I think we will sell out. So I encourage people to come out, support us, and just have a great time and be in community. And the last thing I would say is our mission is really to elevate youth mental health, like, and emotional health at the same level that we place importance on youth physical health. And we got a long ways to go, but we're starting to get there. And if people like Simone Biles keep doing what they're doing and elevating the conversation, we will get there fast.
All right. I mean, when you mentioned you only have 5% of what you need to run the organization here the next year, I mean, how much are you hoping to raise then?
Our goal is $400,000.
Okay. Well, good luck. So is there going to be kind of auctions, silent auction or anything like that? Or is it just really ticket sales?
No, thanks for asking. So, no, it's ticket and sponsorship, but also silent auction and a beautiful live auction. We'll have about $120,000 worth of live auction items. People can bid in the room. They can also bid remotely through a proxy. The granddaddy of the trips we have is a $35,000 a week private home with a staff in Costa Correas, Mexico. That is on 900 acres. It's a private villa on the ocean, and you know, comes with staff, comes with food. It's a very generous donor, and it's an amazing home. They only rent it a couple times a year to A celebrities. So you yourself can be an A celebrity at this beautiful home in Costa Correas.
Okay. Tickets are how much?
Tickets start at $400 and they go up from there.
Okay. And again, it's livelikesam.org.
Livelikesam.org. Thanks, Leslie.
Okay. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Dr. Fisher.
Likewise, and thank you.
Ron Jackenthal, again, co-founder of the Live Like Sam Foundation. The Park City Friends of the Library are hosting their third used book sale, I believe, of the year. In the studio with detail, I have Park City librarian Becca Lell on the phone with me. I have Friends of Library board member Rachel Solman. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Okay, Rachel, you're there. Let's see, Rachel, maybe we'll start with you and just have us the days and hours of the sale.
Yes, thank you, Leslie. Our Labor Day sale, Miner's Day sale, is this weekend, Sunday, September 1st. General public hours are 10 to 4, and Monday, September 2nd, general public is also 10 to 4. However, those who are members of the Friends of the Library can get an early preview and purchase of books from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Sunday, September 1st. Very easy to become a member, and you can do it at the door if you want to come at 8 o'clock. And finally, we have a tote bag happy hour. That happens at the end of the sale from 2 to 4 on Monday, September 2nd, and you can fill a provided tote bag for $15 with all the books that you can fit.
Okay. So in terms of being a member, I think what, a minimum of $25 to become a member to get that early entrance?
We do ask for $25 a year for membership, and that gives you early entrance to the book sale. We also have some additional things that we're working on for later this year and early next that will have some membership benefits as well.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Are there any other benefits in getting in early? So I mentioned, I believe this is your third sale. I think you had one in February. You had one July over the July 4th holiday. And then this one, you've got that many books to sell?
We do. We actually, we had, as you said, we had a sale this winter. We had a little, it was a, maybe a little slower because we had a huge snowstorm the first day of the sale, which has made us a little leery of our winter dates. So we had another sale July 4th. We did not put all the books out for that sale because we had so many books. So we have some books that were not put out for the July sale, but we have received just a ton of books over the last 6 to 8 weeks. I don't know if people have been cleaning this summer, but the donations have been amazing. So we have a lot of books and a lot of new books to put out this this sale for Labor Day.
Okay. And the sale, again, taking place on the third floor there in the community room area?
Yes. Yes. We love being in the community room. It's really a nice space to be able to spread out. Nice and bright up there. So all of the adult books will be in the community room. And then in the 301 room, which is right next door, are the children's books as well as games and puzzles.
All right. So you did have books left over from the July 4th sale. Any idea how many books you've got going to be able to put out?
We're going to put them all out there because we have a lot of books to sell. So I don't know the numbers, but we're certainly in the thousands. And for those who came July, there will be a whole lot of new books for Labor Day. So it really will be, it's almost like a new bookstore for the Labor Day sale.
Now going forward, do you still plan to do three a year? Because that's a lot of work.
We plan to do, we really are finding the July and Labor Day sales are the most visited sales. Winter, as I said, is a little bit difficult with the weather. So the plan going forward, and we're always looking at what's working best for the community, but we would like to stick to two sales if possible.
Great. All right. And then how much do you sell the books for?
So all children's books are $1. Adult paperback are $2, and adult hardcover are $3.
All right.
And we take cash, Venmo, and credit cards for purchases. The credit card purchases need to be over $10.
All right. And in years past, you have just kind of had booksellers come in and just take everything that's left over. Are you going to do that again, or do you hold on to them then for next year?
No, we do. They do go to a bookseller, so it really keeps it fresh. So we're not just taking the books and reboxing them and holding them. We're turning them over sale after sale.
All right. I'm going to let Becca talk to us a little bit about some of the things that the Friends donations have paid for over the last year or so. Good morning.
Good morning. The Friends of the Library have been so wonderful in supplementing some of our innovative ideas and our passion projects that we've had in the last year. In the last year, we've implemented two like technology safe kids options. One is the launch pads. It's an internet free iPad that's preloaded with about 30 plus apps that are genre based. So there could be a STEM launch pad, a math launch pad, a reading launch pad. You just turn it on and it's like ready to go. My daughter loves them, especially if we take a car trip. We'll have the math one. She can play matching. She could play early math counting. It's just a great, I don't have to worry about if she's on a website or where she's navigating. It's such a safe option for parents and kids to explore technology.
So is this something that you loan out, or is it something you have to use in?
It's loanable. We have about 15 right now. It was a great idea that came. The Friends of the Library were able to sponsor it and get our collection started. At the same time, they also sponsored Playaways, which is a small device preloaded with one audiobook. Plug in your headphone and you're good to go. So unlike having it, like downloading it from Libby or ebook app, the kids have it right there. Again, no worry about the internet. You can go walking with it in the car. It's like plug and play. We have some for adults too, but they really sold us on being safe technology for kids, worry-free for parents, and really being able to plug and play and go without worry. And because it was an innovative idea throughout the year, the Friends were able to say, great idea, let's fund it. The community gave us these funds for innovative ideas that the community wants, and we were able to respond really quickly with the champions of the Friends of the Library seeing this great idea that the librarians brought to them.
All right, so do they get them for the traditional 3-week checkout, or
yes.
Is it just a week long?
Oh yeah, 3-week checkout. Another great thing that the Friends have sponsored this year is the music on the patio. Wednesday mornings are my favorite mornings at the library, so stop by this morning. There's music, there's story times, Lucky Ones is invigorated. There's so many people drinking coffee, relaxing, getting their books. It's just such a fun weekday. We also have music on the patio on Saturdays as well. But it's just such a great bustling time at the library when there's music, and it's such just a pleasant part of the neighborhood to be in. And thanks to the Friends, we were able to have that and support local talent as well.
Okay. So what's on your wish list then for the coming year?
Yeah, wish list is kind of unknown right now because we kind of saved the Friends for these innovative ideas, and we've just launched those few things. There's still some things that the Friends are sponsoring throughout the year, and those things are really high in demand products such as ebooks and e-audiobooks. The community can't get enough of it. I can't get enough of it. I'm checking out Libby Books at 10 o'clock at night when my daughter's in bed, right? We just can't get enough of it. And so the Friends of the Library have seen that community need and supplement our budget to be able to get more. Another collection that they really supplemented is our youth graphic novel collection. Our youth readers cannot get enough books. These are like the prime readers of our community. These like second graders to fourth, sixth graders who love graphic novels. And our collection has been able to double within the last 2 years. Really focusing on their needs. They're voracious. I mean, they're reading 16 graphic novels in a few weeks. They're read before they're even checked out. So this is a really great opportunity for us to really meld our interests of community interests, the Friends responding, and the library's needs.
Yeah. So tell people what a graphic novel
okay,
is.
Graphic novels. Okay, graphic novel is a broad term used for comic books. So like you'll think about Dog Man, you'll think about Batman. Graphic novel is more of like an adult term for like Fun Home is a classic, more literary based, illustrated novels, right? But then there's also our single issue comics that you would think of like in the 50s where Batman was 14 pages. We still have those, and we just integrated those into our collection as well. So it's just a broad range, full collection that everyone enjoys too.
I was going to say, now back to the ebooks then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that, maybe you could just explain how that works. Mm-hmm. You know, you just think it's out there on the internet, but the library actually has to purchase the book to be in order to
right.
loan it?
Each book needs to be purchased just like a physical book. But since that book can be loaned multiple times, we're paying much more than a physical copy would be just because it's so dynamic. And I guess you can think of it as this way. The publishers are seeing a physical copy can be circulated how many times? 20 times? An ebook can be circulated tons of times. So they also put caps on how many times that book can be read before you need to repurchase that book. So we're not paying the $24 that we would pay for like a new James Patterson book. The ebook copy is not worth that much. In the publisher's eyes, it's worth much more. So the budget needs to be wider. And that's not to discourage the community from reading ebooks, because that's where our readership is. But it just is a different kind of a moving mechanism where we need to allocate our funds in a way that we support our readership.
And this was just kind of dawning on me as I was kind of preparing for this interview. It's like, I mean, I was one of those that's like, oh, I'm never going to read a digital book. That's, you know, that's really 90% of my book reading anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But why, and that's really the only thing I don't like about it, is that I can't say, oh, Becca, I read this great book. Here you go.
Yeah.
I mean, is there that technology that's going to happen to allow us then to pass on or to donate our ebooks to, you know, Friends of Library?
That's a great question. And I think the answer is going to be no, because publishers are there to make money, right? And that's just the digital world of books, unlike our physical books, right? And so, unless there was a publisher who wishes to pass that along, unfortunately, that's not the reality of the publishing world.
Okay. Again, the Miner's Day book sale happening this Sunday, September 1st, 10 to 4. If you're a Friends of the Library member, you'll get in between 8 and 10. And then again, Monday from 10 to 4. And don't forget about the tote bag sale from 2 to 4 on Monday afternoon. Rachel, just wanted to also mention, you've got that Friends Corner at the library. People can purchase these books pretty much all year long, yeah?
Yes, we stock the Friends Corner every week. We are adding new books. They go quickly there. So if you, especially in the winter, I think it's a favorite place for people to come and view the books. They can pay at the desk. There's also Venmo there. So that's a great place. And thank you for mentioning it, Leslie. It's a great place for people to be able to purchase used books all year long.
All right. And then you talked about maybe some events coming up. Are we talking about perhaps bringing back the author luncheon that Friends used to do?
It's a great question. We really are re-looking at what the community post-COVID, like many organizations, we're looking at kind of re-looking at the special events that we do. So we will certainly have some new events to announce in the coming months.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to say thank you so much to the Friends. They are a great champion and cheerleaders. When I started my role about 10 years ago, they saw the need for professional development and decided that they should send me to a conference, fully funded it, and really invest in our staff. So I just want to say they're just such cheerleaders for reading, the library, the staff, the community, and thank you for everyone who shops at the sale, supports the library, and thank you for the Friends for organizing it.
Rachel, anything from you?
Thank you, Leslie. No, great partnership between the library and Friends, and we really appreciate all that we can do together for the community.
Okay. Becca Lail, Rachel Solomon, thanks so much for your time this morning. Well, it's hard to believe, but it's already here. The annual Midway Swiss Day is happening this weekend. On the phone with us, I've got the chairman of the event, Craig Simons. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Leslie.
This is a huge undertaking. Is this a volunteer position for you and all of the others that help out?
Pretty much, yes. It's an event that brings our whole community together, and I think the funnest part of it is we all get to rub shoulders serving and being together as a community.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the genesis of Swiss Days. I mean, it's been happening as long as I can remember.
So Swiss Days actually began in 1947. It was initially known as Harvest Days, community celebration at the end of the growing season. Midway used to be a dairy and a farming community. We've grown since then, and the event has grown too.
All right. So why has Midway aligned itself with Switzerland? I mean, we see, of course, kind of that Swiss-themed town hall building and others. I mean, at what point did it go from Harvest Day to Swiss Days?
Well, the original settlers of the community here back in the 1880s settled, and most of them were from Switzerland and Germany. A lot of those original families are still in the community, and some of their relatives or ancestors are folks that are on the square volunteering even today.
Okay. So as I mentioned, it is a two-day event. It starts this Friday. Maybe you can just tell us what we have to look forward to.
Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. There's lots of local food. Everything's got a little bit of a Swiss flair to it. We've also got a parade. There'll be a flyover during the parade for some World War II aircraft. There's a one-mile run before that where folks can run down the parade route and wave to Grandma and Grandpa and whoever else they know in the community. There's 184 vendors that have applied for and have been rented a space to sell their wares, and most of it is homemade. Some of it does have a local flair, and also some kind of Swiss representation as well. So there's a lot of crafts and hand goods.
Okay. That's quite, that's pretty incredible. 184, are they all local or they come just from Utah, your surrounding area here?
No, they come from all over the country. Local vendors, we try to support those that are local, but we do have a lot of people that have come year after year. It's a lottery system where we give people, new folks, an opportunity to join us. And it's quite popular.
Okay. And then you've also got what is the Town Square tent, and then I think the Town Hall stage. So the market happens within the tent, or tell us what's what?
The tent, the big tent in the middle that's covering the ice rink, is there for entertainment that goes on both Friday and Saturday. And then inside the Town Hall as well, there's a play. The Boosters, the local organization that Swiss Days is under their umbrella, puts on, there's a Swiss choir, there's a Swiss bells group that will perform as well. The One Voice Children's Choir will be there as well. So we bring locals that volunteer, musicians, and then also some of these large choral groups. And then there's a little traditional William Tell play that those that have been around a while have had the opportunity as a youth to be involved in. So, yeah, there's continuous food and entertainment and places to spend money and go home with a carload of fun stuff.
Okay. As you mentioned, the run happening, that's going to be Saturday morning at 9. Is it people can still register for that?
Yes, just go to the website, MidwaySwissDays.org.
All right, and then
there for the parade and for the run.
All right, yeah, and I was going to mention, so you can still register to be a part of the parade?
Yes.
All right. Tell me about the Scott family of Midway, because they're on the schedule a few times.
That one I'm not up on with somebody that handles the entertainment.
Okay.
I try to get away and get out of the sun and sit and listen to the entertainment, and it's all, they all do a great job.
All right. And maybe just some of the tips for locals about parking and you know, when the best time to go or the fewer, you know, when there's fewer crowds, because it's a busy, busy weekend.
It is a busy weekend. The parking lot is on River Road as you come in off of Highway 40 across from the Kohler Dairy. We do have buses that go down into Town Square. So just be patient. It's a $10 per vehicle charge. And they bus you downtown, and then the buses are running all day long back and forth. As far as the quietest time, probably early afternoon and late morning. But just come prepared to have a good time and enjoy the crowds.
Okay. Craig, anything else you want to let us know about it?
Come and have a great time and share this great little community of Midway with us.
Okay. All right, Craig Simons, again, the chairman of Midway Swiss Days. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
The murder case against Akamas' mother of three will go to trial. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports a judge ruled prosecutors have enough evidence to pursue the 11 felonies against Corey Richens.
The mother, who went on to write a children's book about grieving, faces aggravated murder, attempted murder, drug distribution, and financial charges in connection with the March 2022 death of her husband, Eric Richens. Third District Judge Richard Mrozek says she'll stand trial for each charge.
We are not determining in any degree guilt at all. Ms. Richens was presumed innocent of all charges yesterday. She is presumed innocent of all charges today, and she will remain presumed innocent of all charges through trial.
Richens pleaded not guilty to all 11 after the judge's ruling Tuesday. The two-day hearing began with witness testimony Monday. Tuesday, both sides made oral arguments. The judge pressed Summit County prosecutors about the attempted murder charge connected to an alleged medical emergency Eric Richens suffered on Valentine's Day, weeks before his death.
Prosecutors allege that's when Richens first tried to poison her husband with fentanyl, but defense attorney Kathy Nestor says they don't have evidence to show Richens caused his reaction.
We're going to stand trial for attempted aggravated murder, which is about the next to most serious charge you can ever be charged with, because he went to take a nap is pushing it, Your Honor. We're just asking that the court exercise your gatekeeping function.
But the state proffered evidence, including a sworn statement from Richens' alleged drug dealer and a message Richens sent her later that month asking for something stronger, quote, some of the Michael Jackson stuff. Here's Chief Prosecutor Brad Bloodworth.
And then she doesn't check on him for 2 hours. She doesn't come home. She doesn't text. She doesn't call. She doesn't check on him. Their next communication is 2 hours later, when Eric Richens checks in with the defendant.
Judge Mrozek says Utah law requires that he give prosecutors the benefit of the doubt during a preliminary hearing. It's up to the jury to consider alternative theories of what happened at the trial. Nestor and fellow defense attorneys Wendy Lewis and Alex Ramos said in a statement after the hearing they respect the court's decision, but they're confident a jury will find Corey Richens innocent. They added the past 15 months have taken a toll on Richens and her children, saying they'd like to allow her and her family to move on. Richens' mother, Lisa Darden, declined to comment, and Eric Richens' family spokesperson, Greg Skordis, did not give a statement. A pretrial conference is set for September 23rd, where the parties will discuss jury selection, which is tentatively scheduled for the end of April. That means the earliest Corey Richens could stand trial would be May 2025, 2 years after her arrest. She's being held without bond in the Summit County Jail. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, KPCW has a new president and general manager after a months-long search. Juliana Alley has been the nonprofit's finance director for about 10 years and now adds a new title to her resume. KPCW Amber Johnson sat down with a new GM to discuss her goals and priorities.
Last spring, the KPCW Board of Trustees hired a national recruitment firm to search for a new general manager. Through this process, the board determined the best candidate was already serving in the role. Robert Holmes, chairman of KPCW's board, said Juliana Alley has been doing a fantastic job as interim GM since Renee Bodley's departure in May. He said through a comprehensive search process, we realized that we already had the most qualified candidate doing the job, and in discussions with the staff, we confirmed that bringing someone in from the outside was not in the best interest of the station. Alley is a certified public accountant who has been KPCW's director of finance for almost a decade. Previously, she was a senior audit manager specializing in nonprofit clients at Deloitte and a staff auditor at Mahoney Cohen in New York City. She and her husband Dave moved to Park City 18 years ago. In the years since, their family has grown to include their two daughters. She said she has witnessed growth and change across the Wasatch Back and at KPCW as well.
It's grown tremendously. Our news team, when I started, was Leslie Thatcher, Rick Bruff, Lynn Ware Peak, and then a part-time person. And that was it. And now we've got 4 full-time reporters. We're hiring a Spanish language reporter. We have a managing editor, a news director. Leslie Thatcher, of course, is still here as senior news director.
KPCW's development, digital, and production teams have expanded as well. As GM, her many plans include expanding the station's digital reach and enhancing KPCW's app.
Radio, I hope, will never go away, but we have to meet the consumers where they are. And not everybody does listen. A lot of people just want to go to their phone or go to their device and consume specifically. So I want KPCW to be one of those places that people go to.
She said the station is committed to delivering daily news and information to residents in Summit and Wasatch counties.
But I'd really love to cultivate a human interest side of radio. I'd also love to expand our live music offerings. We had Wyatt Pike in the station during one of our pledge drive hours, which was so cool. You could just feel the vibe and the energy. To have a live musician in the production booth was just great.
That's Amber Johnson reporting.